Welcome in, and
Hey.
this is the Legacy Rite, and Lysander Spooner behind me says hello as well. I am the Legacy of Jennifer and Kaiser. I am Zachary Kaiser. This is Andrew Joseph and his happy-go-lucky USA t-shirt. Very nice.
Right.
Very nice setting right there, especially after Iowa. I'm now New
See,
Hampshire.
it says USA. I'm on the run from the law. There you go.
You run from, yeah. So at least it doesn't say USSR, man.
Yeah.
What's the difference anymore? So, but before we jump in, we got yet another special guest that we're bringing on. We're jumping in on this guest thing, man. It makes things spicy and better. So, but
Yeah.
we got another one for you. But first, you know how it goes, Andrew. We got a plug. Small business. Go to fanghornforesters.com if you are into woodworking needs and necessities. It's my cousin's business. He's trying to start it up. Hit them links. Go to fanghornforesters.com. Check out his bowls. Get a bowl, get a knife cutting board, get a coaster. I mean, and anything. And he does other custom orders as well. So, if you're in the Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky area, Southeastern Indiana. You can also get millwork, and he'll come to you. Not order ship out. Like he actually will come to you. He has a mobile millwork service, so he'll do your milling on your property for a fee. And then yeah, there we go. So but fanghornforesters.com. That's Fanghorn, the leader of the Ents, and he is an Ent. So. FanghornForesters.com. So let's get to the show, man. So I'd like to introduce Mr. Pat Kirby. Thank you for coming on, sir. If you want to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us your story and where to begin, and then we'll get going onto the actual part of the show after the introductions.
Certainly. I'm Pat Kirby, a longtime libertarian. I was a Ron. Well, my first introduction into libertarianism was I produced the TV commercials for André Maru in 1992, then got involved in the Ron Paul campaign, and I was a delegate in 2008 and 2012. 2008, I didn't get to go to the national convention because the Nevada Republican Party canceled our convention because we were winning all the delegates. So they actually shut down the convention and locked up the ballots for a year. And we had all kinds of legal battles and the second convention and everything. And then I was in 2012, I went to the national convention and was on the Republican platform committee and got to introduce a whole bunch of libertarian stuff. I also have produced a web series about a libertarian superhero named Max Justice. And so check that out at maxjustice.tv. Just a longtime advocate for liberty and philosopher of the principles of liberty.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we were just talking before we started recording about Max Justice. So I'm gonna check it out. Andrew's definitely gonna check it out and go check it out. So
Cool.
MaxJustice.tv. So but yeah, I mean when it comes to libertarianism though, Pat, like where do you think it's where do you think it goes kind of astray, where it goes wrong, and how do we take what's wrong and kind of turn it back towards the heels of the right direction?
Well, I mean, the country's gone wrong because we have neglected to teach our children to have a reverence for liberty. I'm not one to nitpick libertarianism too much because we have greater enemies at our gates. And I don't like to see libertarians and anarchists fighting about the minutiae. on the parapets while there are barbarians at the gates. You know, I'd rather be pouring oil and throwing rocks at the bad guys. But you know, there that doesn't mean to say that there are not, you know, that there's there are definitely flaws, but the thing is like we should all recognize that the principles of liberty are the formula for the just and peaceful advancement of humanity, and we should be working on perfecting them, not wasting our time messing around with proven failed ideologies.
Yeah, we should be trying to grow that tree of liberty rather than fighting amongst ourselves. Hey,
exactly. Yeah. Instead of like sabotaging the roots or, you know, cutting off limbs of our own tree, we need to be, you know, and that's not to say you also have to be careful of agent provocateurs in the party that present the party as something less than what it is. I think the Libertarian Party loses its way when it tries to be a political party instead of being a principle you can vote for. You know, I think if that is the focus, then we don't lose our way and we don't, you know, nominate bad agents to try to carry the Libertarian philosophy forward like we have, you know, the last couple of times when during our presidential nominees. I really like the slate of candidates we have this year. I think they articulate, so far, I think they all articulate the message of liberty really well. And, you know, and I'm excited to see what happens because, you know, we have Javier Milei, who is kind of an untested quality, but so far so good, as president of Argentina. And it's the first time a libertarian has been elected as a president of a country with 50 million people. And he's going to be president for a year, implementing libertarian policies, hopefully, you know, for a year. By the time our election rolls around, who knows what could happen? You know, I hate it when other countries out liberty America, but, you know, maybe that's the thing we need for all of these uneducated, you know, ignorant people to say, hey, wait a second, maybe there's something to this, you know, and kind of re-embrace our legacy.
It's pretty interesting on everything that's gone down in Argentina for decades and their failed policies, economics. I mean, just down the tubes. They had nothing, and this guy just out of nowhere just ends up getting. I mean, just a local economist, more astute towards like the Chicagoan school, but very well reversed in Austrian theory. Just comes out of nowhere, takes up the reins, and he's actually, it seems like he really is kind of eroding that state apparatus. We'll see if we'll see the future. I mean, you don't know, nobody can predict the future, but we'll, I mean, right,
exactly,
now it does look like he's doing some good tread work down there, and that's what the United States needs to get to.
Exactly, and he's thrown. You know, he's thrown in the garbage this idea that you have to be a moderate to peel this. When a nation hits bottom and they're ready, you don't have to be a moderate. It's like I don't know if I can cut. I don't know if I can cuss here, but he's like, you parasites, you cunts. He's like just throwing it at the status, and he's not being a moderate. And I think. Yeah, and I think that's the path, you know, because you have to let these people know, look, these are the people trying to kill you. The state is, you know, whether it has good intentions or not, ultimately it wants to starve you and kill you. And you have to recognize these people as the enemies they are, and you know, and go after them full force. So forget this moderation stuff, you know, especially after COVID. No, these people should not be in charge of anything.
Your suffering is their job security.
Right. Yeah, and your ignorance is their power.
Yeah, I mean, and that's education's key. I mean, if you
Yeah.
don't, if you don't spread a message that actually embraces, thinking, critical thinking, and trying to express yourself and expand on knowledge, what are you going to get? You're going to get more along the lines of just a drone.
Yeah.
I mean.
No, I really, I got in a discussion the other day about IQ, and I really believe that introducing young people to the principles of liberty, the principles of self-ownership, raises people's IQ because it creates the path in their brain that says, if this, then what? Like, if I own my own body, then what are taxes? Then what are these rules and regulations that are preventing me from opening a business and things like that? And so they can start to see the injustice, and it creates this long-term thinking that people are willing to sacrifice now to create the rising tide down the road. And in the modern age, where people, these kids are taught to be ruled by their emotion, there's a school shooting. So people go, oh, we got to ban guns. And then they go, yeah, we got to ban guns, when they have never even pondered the ideology or the basic principle of self-defense. Like, if I attack you with a stick, do you have the right to pick up a stick to defend yourself? And now that principle is now scalable, and just, look at the take a moment to look at the history of the world of what happens to unarmed populations when their government becomes totalitarian, and they always do eventually. So, it's like, and young people have never been presented with this idea. So, if I'm trying to figure out what's the best age, to like plant the seed and then ponder it further, and then that creates this pathway to saying, if this, then what? And and I think that raises either libertarians all have high IQs, or the principles of liberty presented to people raises people's IQs, because you have these well-educated scholars that think socialism works. I mean, how stupid do you have to be to look at world history and then think, it's so there you go.
It falls back to, men in suits destroy the country, but men in work pants and work boots build the country,
Right,
They're just comfortable because they don't have to actually do anything besides think.
yeah, and then that always leads to overthinking, and then you become as useless. I have a saying that academics in a crisis have a similar value to sandbags for flood control. When the shit hits the fan, you're gonna need the guy in the work pants.
No doubt, no doubt. I was actually just talking. I was over at my cousin's, the one with the ad at the beginning, and he had a friend over, and I was just actually talking with his buddy, just last night about self-sufficient behavior and just preparing, and you don't have to have that doomsday philosophy, like everything's gonna go to shit in a handbasket, and you got to be prepared. Now you just have to be like, to be prepared is to just know, understand how to be creative and innovative and use what you got, and know what you can trade with somebody if you need something and they need something else that you have, and you want something or need something they have, or
Right.
just learn how to grow your, I mean, just grow like basic, like food, like basic crops, like doesn't have to be much. I mean, or stock up on cigarettes. I mean, there's your currency right there. But
Right.
I mean, just the creative mindset of just knowing, like, if knowing how to build something, knowing how to grow. I mean, just being self-sufficient and acknowledging relationships, and trying to go out in your community and like finding people that you can work with. You don't necessarily have to like them, but you can work with them. I mean, everybody needs somebody. So, and that's, yep. That's all it's about is being sufficient. If you're not, if we're not teaching like the younger generations that, then where are they going to be in the long run down the line? If something as catastrophic as, say, the United States federal government collapses, the monetary monopoly is no more, and the country is in disarray as a whole, you're going to have smaller little communities. You're going to have to rely on community, because even the state's not going to be a new, you're not going to have the state as another country. You're literally going to have just fractured. There's a show that came out in like the mid 2010s called Revolution on NBC. You're going to have more of a society like that rather than, or even Fallout, the game Fallout. You're going to have society more like that, and you're going to have to rely on people, or you're just going to go at it alone. And what happens when you go alone?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. There's this momentum. People get their comfort in the, and they don't realize how frail a society is. You know, mm-hmm. I like to say, if the money's no good, what's to compel the guy driving the grocery truck to make the trip? Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't make the trip, how long can you last? You know, so there's a proper government wants, if there is such a thing, wants mm-hmm. its citizens to be educated, self-sufficient, and armed. And any other is not to be trusted. So, you know, you can take those things and say, if your government is not promoting that in its citizenry, then you need to replace your government. I'm a filmmaker, and there's a position in filmmaking called the key grip, and mm-hmm. special effects guys are even more than that. If you are in a crisis, if the shit hits the fan, you want to know a key grip, because the TV show MacGyver was based on key grips. They're just used to making anything out of nothing. You know, and are innovative in that way, and make things happen fast. And yeah, so I'm a big fan of key grips and special effects guys, because they know their shit and they know how to get things done. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's the kind of thing you want to know: a mechanic, you want to yeah. know someone who can grow food, you want to know someone who knows about strategy and self-defense, you know, how to reload ammo. You want to know all these things in your community. You want to know a person like that, and you want to be able to trust them, because when the shit hits the fan, everybody's going to be looking at theirs, and there, you need to build a community, but you've got to be careful, you know, after that happens. So it's better to prepare for that kind of thing ahead of time, you know, and just understand how fragile society is. And how fragile it's become on purpose, the whole Soros move to elect district attorneys that do selective enforcement of the law has eroded law and order. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what people miss. You know, they say, oh, well, we're going to be empathetic to these criminals. It's like, mm-hmm. You can't have a society like that, because that, you know, look at California, the CVSs and everything, they're all closing because, you know, they can't make a profit when the government has basically legalized shoplifting, you know, and so society decays, and now you can't buy your prescriptions anywhere, you know, and we have millions of immigrants in the United States now that we have no idea who they are. And, you know, you can predict behavior on incentives. Why would a third world country house dangerous criminals when they can just bus them to the border and let them go, you know, and then they don't have to pay for them anymore. And if people think that stuff like that isn't happening, they're crazy, because of course it's going to happen, because, you know, why would it not? So you have to de-incentivize all of the bad behavior and promote good behavior. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're in a lot of trouble. You know, it's hard. It's going to be hard to come back from this. Be prepared and don't, you know, live in a cloud that thinks that a functional society is always going to be here, because it's already not. You know, look at 10 years ago and look at us now, and society is already on the verge of breakdown.
And sadly, every day you get closer and closer towards what could be positive or negative. You just got to work for the negative. You got to work towards the positive aspect.
Exactly.
And
yeah, be hopeful, but be prepared.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Andrew, it's good to be black-pilled, but sometimes you got to be a little white-pilled, all right?
Sure. I know.
Yeah, I take these little victories like Javier Milei and, you know, and who knows, you know, whether – I always believe that during a time when the bewildered herd, as the propagandists call the citizenry, get angry, that a propagandist will emerge to say all the right things and then point people in the wrong direction at a critical moment. So I'm sitting here wondering, is it Vivek, or is it RFK? You know, because I'm sure that they do this. I mean, it's happened before. That's how the Tea Party movement dissolved. There's all these people. Remember, Paul Ryan said he was Tea Party. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They came and they, you know, they came and talked to just enough stuff to get people to sort of trust them. And then right at pivotal moments, they'll point people in the wrong direction or sabotage the movement. So, mm-hmm. you know, I know we have to be aware of these things, but I'm always grateful during the time when they are shattering the Overton window, because, you know, I'm saying, okay, hopefully people are waking up to this, you know, and the way both of them are shattering these sacred cows, that anytime there's a sacred cow that we can't talk about, that needs to be butchered and dissected to find the lies underneath. The sacred cows, like the childhood vaccine schedule, and the origins of COVID, and election integrity, and Israel. All of these things need to, like, just be, you need to ask questions and demand answers, and that's the path to finding truth.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of some hard truth or whatever, or as well as disinformation, but some hard truth that it's hard to gather. And the transition to the biggest issue probably in our today's world, immigration. Coming from an agorist perspective, for me and Andrew, we're open to the idea of, like, society is statist. It's political. It's statist. It's institutional. It's set up on a standard where it's just conformity and structure. So, like, when we look at borders, the only border that matters is, like, what you've settled and homesteaded and work, and you pretty much, that your domain is the domain on this natural earth that you're making your home for your business, etc. And then, so a country doesn't really have any, they have no objective to have any real authority towards property rights. Public property is not property. Borders really don't actually exist. So what are your thoughts, like, on the immigration issue? Would it be better, in order to fix it, to try to de-establish the welfarist policies and promote, like, open competition? Because realistically, it all comes down to jobs. That's the argument, the debate that is used by statists, is these, you know, especially, like, right now it's the Republican side that is anti-illegal immigration, but they all don't care because it's about jobs. They're coming over here to steal your jobs. So how do you mold into an idea for a brighter future, to where we can maybe eradicate borders like those on the left say that we need to do, but then eradicate welfareism and promote markets like those on the right say we need to do.
Yeah, believe me, this is the issue where libertarians are conflicted, because mm-hmm. there's this moral principle of the freedom to travel mm-hmm. that we all agree with, and yeah. then there's this reality that there are bad actors in the world, and mm-hmm. what is the best way to, you know, it's like nationalism has gotten, you know, Hitler gave nationalism a bad name, but when you mm-hmm. compare it to one global government, nationalism is individualism for nations, and mm-hmm. the model for, like, the model in the United States where each state is able to compete in this you know, vast sandbox. market of ideas, when people can vote with their feet and move for where the ideas that suit them the best, is a vastly better business model for the mm-hmm. governance of humanity than one world government, centralized government dictating the same thing for all, unless that government dictated freedom for all. So yeah, we have this conflict in the United States between our, you know, amongst libertarians, in this internal conflict with many that say, yes, we believe in the fundamental right to travel. And then that is balanced with how many people that want to kill you do you want to let live in your garage? Mm-hmm. You know, so and then that, you know, and you can say that principle is scalable. So is the United States the property of people who believe in liberty? You know, and then do we have to defend that property against people who don't? So it's this conflict that you recognize that you believe in this fundamental principle, but in the reality of the situation is that we're not going to have any place to live that cherishes liberty if we let the United States die. So, you know, I think the position of libertarians should either be take the whole issue off of our platform and say, yeah, we're conflicted about this, but mm-hmm. right now, if we don't abolish the welfare state and we keep letting people who have no property, you know, come into the United States, that we're going to be overrun. And you can see that this is a plan of the Marxists to do this unlimited immigration that in an ideal world, if you come to the United States, it's because you want to be an American. And by American, I believe I say a person who believes in individual liberty, individualism over collectivism, you know, don't hurt people, don't take their stuff. And, you know, we create this society where we respect each other, we trade with each other, and, you know, and we prosper. But the reality of this situation is, as I said again, you know, why would a third world country house criminals when they can just bus them to the border? And what do we do about that? You know, you have to be able to vet the people that are coming into your country. I think that the people who come into the country to work hard and build a better life and be free are more Americans than the Democrats that are, you know, or the statists, as you say, that are giving away the store. Mm-hmm. But those are how do you know which is which? And then as a libertarian, you're going like, oh, you know, that's a statist thing. We're expecting the state to do the vetting. And mm-hmm. and so we have this internal conflict. But, you know, ultimately, if it comes down to survival, then we might have to admit that we're wrong. It's like anarchy is great until the assholes show up. And mm-hmm. then you have to pool your resources in some way to deal with the assholes. And that inevitably becomes some form of government. You know, I'm not a minarchist because I think government is better. I'm a minarchist because I think government is inevitable.
That's fair to say. And I think, Andrew, since we're pretty much touching on it, you always like to bring this topic up. So you have anything to add about coveted or sandbox communities, the Hoppian idea that kind of fits this?
I was sitting there thinking, you know, me and Zach both a big fans, I could say, of the Nomad Capitalist program on YouTube. And Nomad Capitalist. It's Nomad Capitalist.
Yeah. I'll have to check it out.
Basically, what he does is he was from the United States. He's from Ohio, and he felt like the business environment and structure and stuff like that wasn't good to do business just in the United States. So he went and started researching like citizenship by investment and a bunch of other stuff like that. And he started a business out of it, and he helps people move all around the world. What I was thinking, you know, like I said, we're both fans of that, and we're both kind of behind the scenes fans of wrestling and stuff like that. And I was kind of silly, but you had the old, back in the 90s, you had WCW, and then you had WWE, and they're two different environments. One has got like really rigid structure, and you could, you know, if as long as you contributed to the conversation of the program, you could really make a lot of money, you know, make a lot of star power. And then the other one was, it had a foundation, the WCW, but it didn't have any structure. They just kind of went as the night went on. And I mean, they made a lot of money, but eventually they failed. Do you think people would benefit better if they decided to move out of the country in an environment where there's not a lot of structure, or, you know, where there's a lot more creative control, what they can do with what they want to do with their money and their time? Or do you think it would be better to go to a country that's starting to build that structure, but they have less freedoms?
I have a big problem with less freedoms. There was a time I invested in some land in Panama, you know, and Panama was a place where they have this government, but the people don't really pay attention to it. Because the government pretty much leaves them alone, because the government has this cash cow that is the canal. So they don't have to overtax their people. They don't have, so they just kind of like leave them alone. That's not to say that, you know, you're going to get a speeding ticket wherever you go, and then you just give the cop cash. There's corruption and things like that. And you can live with it, and, you know, you can pretty much do what you want and, you know, start a business and do whatever. In fact, they wanted people to invest there. I don't know what it's like now, because it's a lot's changed. But, you know, during COVID, they locked everybody down. They forced vaccines. They, you know, they mandated lockdowns, and you can't have guns. So it's a problem. You know, if the government starts to decay and crime gets bad and you don't have guns, you know, then it's a problem. So, you know, the Second Amendment is a big reason for me to stay in the United States, because basically, you know, and there's the argument that, oh, you know, if they come for you, there's nothing you're going to be able to do and things like that. But it's still a deterrent, you know, for people to, for the government, not just to say, we're going to do whatever we want. I mean, did Australia shock you guys during COVID? You know, I always thought Australia was full of Crocodile Dundees and real independent thinkers and people say, hey, fuck the government. You know, but man, the level of compliance and the level of lockdowns and everything like that. Well, it shocked me here too. You know, I remember the first talk of lockdowns and things like that. And I tweeted at the time, the proper role of government in a crisis is to provide accurate information and advisories never mandates. And, you know, I was shocked that that wasn't the attitude of Americans. You know, there's Kristi Noem. Well, South Dakota is the only one who got it right from the beginning, saying it's not the role of government to decide which business is essential and which business isn't. She was the only one who got it right from the very beginning. And I've been told that was because her legislature forced her to do it, you know, and not on her own. I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, a lot of the Liberty people in South Dakota aren't that fond of Kristi Noem but she put out a public YouTube that I still share to this day, where she gives a speech about the proper role of government in a crisis. And it was fantastic. So kudos to her for that, at the very least. But yeah, I don't, you know, I'm still of the belief that if we lose liberty in America, there's a meme I have of a dam, and it says on the dam is American gun owners, the valley is the people of the world, and the lake is a totalitarian government, you know, totalitarian control of everybody. And the second, you know, the gun owners of the United States are the ones holding that back, because we hold our politicians back. You know, if we didn't have the Second Amendment, do you think they would stop? That any of this stuff would have stopped? No, I don't think so. It would, we'd be like Australia or New Zealand.
Yeah. It is. I mean, honestly, my take on Australia, it kind of makes sense, because they were forever a penal colony. And, you know, I mean, it started as a penal colony. And it's the criminals were sent there, and now it's a country, and it's.
Yeah. How does that get in your DNA rather than.
Yeah.
Becoming not a penal colony, you know, it's funny. There's people think that liberty is in our DNA in America, but it's not. You know, COVID proved that. You have to educate every upcoming generation. This eternal vigilance thing wasn't just a buzzword; it was a universal truth, and we failed to be vigilant at pivotal times.
Yeah, and that's a scary aspect of the COVID crisis, is we can say that people are just so scared of their own shadow that they're more than willing to do whatever it is that they're told. I mean, in order to provide some sort of protection. And I mean, somewhere along the line, at one point, like in this country, 100 years ago, life expectancy was shorter, but people were taking more risks in order to survive and maintain for their families. And I guess it, would you say that maybe the comfort level, because of our modern technological advances and all of our, all the challenges that we've kind of progressed forward against, it's kind of made this comfort level to where we don't necessarily need to survive. So we're so safe that we don't need to think about safety anymore.
Yeah. So it's the soft men create hard times, hard times create hard men create good times. We're in the soft men create hard times, part of that cycle. It's the Benjamin Franklin quote: those who would give up liberty for security will lose both. And it again comes down to the IQ thing of, if this, then what, you know? You can look at, you know, if you create a society, if you start letting criminals run free, you don't punish theft, you know, then society decays. And it's, you know, this leftist policies create societal decay. And then the leftist answer, their foil for societal decay, is to disarm the people who oppose leftist policies. You know, so it just creates this cycle of things getting worse and worse until we hit bottom. you know, and Argentina hit bottom. I don't know what we have to do to hit bottom. You know, the failure of the forward thinking of if this, then what? Leftists can't look past the idea of a corrupt election and know that it leads to war. You know, so by not demanding security in elections, you're committing your children to civil war because, you know, as John F. Kennedy said, if you make peaceful revolution impossible, you make violent revolution inevitable. And, you know, if this, then what? Think long term, you know, think of what's who was it? Milton Friedman said it's the height of folly to judge a policy by its intent rather than its consequences. You know, so you have to be able to look at something and say, okay, let's add human nature into this equation and see what this policy is going to do. It's like the incentives of the pharmaceutical industry are to keep people sick. They're not to make people well. A customer cured or a patient cured is a customer lost. So there's these incentives. And the incentives for the illegal immigration, if you're going to give them the store and give them housing and stuff like that, of course, you're going to get more of it. And where does that end? They're kicking people out of hotels in Chicago and stuff like that to house illegal immigrants. How long can a hotel last doing that? You know, they're all going to go out of business and then they're just going to be empty shells and no one taking care of it. And leftists can't see the consequences of these policies. So I think they're insane.
Or they do see the consequences of it and they just don't care. So
it's a death cult. You know, it's like, do people realize, can people not see the long-term consequences of, you know, now everything we talk about is related to race, you know, pitting us against each other. You know, the idea that we either live to learn to live together as brothers. It's early here. We either learn to live together as brothers or perish together as fools. It's alarming how many people are promoting the second half of that equation these days. It's like, what's the long-term goal of this division by racism? How do we create a world where we can all live together? I'm ranting, but I look at Israel, the situation in Israel, and I know the solution is to create a government that treats all people equally and, you know, everyone's equal under the law. And then you have to do that for 50 years. And it's this ancient tribal hate and collectivism that is preventing anyone from starting that process. You know, it's like maybe in 50 years you're going to have peace, but it's a process that somebody's going to have to start, or you just keep murdering each other, you know, and dragging the whole world into the war so we can all murder each other. And, you know, where does that leave us in an age where someone can create a biological weapon or nuclear weapons that can kill us all, you know? So what's the ultimate goal for these people? And it's got to be a death cult, but somehow they think they're going to survive it. Yeah, it's crazy. Liberty is the only formula for the just and peaceful advancement of humanity. And besides that, it's not important.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it seems like the train of thought for the old aristocracy of ancient times and medieval era and all, I mean, it's this, the mentality is still there. And as we've progressed towards more liberal views, liberal in the context of classical liberalism, not neoliberalism, but where individual liberty has become the forefront, and property rights, whether you want to refer to it as the fiat or the natural, property rights has become more grand on an individual level. People want to be left alone. But it seems like the ancient aristocracy wants to restore the balance of order from the old to where they were the top dogs. You have this class of different layers where the peasantry are the peasants, the ruling class to the ruling class, and then you have those in between that are your subservient classes to the ruling class, like the knights, the merchant class, the church, whatever. So they want to bring back this feudalist structure, in my opinion,
yes,
in order to balance out the yes. order, because liberty yes. is chaos.
Yeah, I'm smarter than you, so do what I say, and I can stay in power, is basically what it is. The age-old, tired ideology of the many ruled by the few. Mm-hmm. You know, and America was supposed to turn that on its head and recognize mm-hmm. the value of. Did you guys ever heard or read The 5,000 Year Leap?
I've heard of it. I've not read it.
It's a book by Cleon Skousen, and I can. It's got a lot of great quotes from the founders and stuff like that. But I can summarize it in this: 5,000 years of human evolution. We went from wind-powered sailing ships to slightly better wind-powered sailing ships, from horse-drawn carts to horse-drawn carriages. Then liberty was introduced to the world, and in 200 years, we're sending rockets into space.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an accident. That's because prior to that, if you had an idea and you didn't know the king or a lord or a sponsor, there wasn't jack shit you can do with it. When mm-hmm. liberty was introduced to the world, if you had an idea, you could go build it in your garage. So all mm-hmm. of a sudden, the mental capacity, the collective mental capacity of humanity was broadened to a whole population. And then things started to progress, and then the rest of the world had to compete. And
mm-hmm.
and here we go. So you have to remember that formula, that the chaos of liberty is what moves humanity forward. Mm-hmm. And if you try to bring order to it, to stop the people who will fly from flying, mm-hmm. because when the individuals who fly, Elon Musk, you know, Nikola Tesla, whatever, when those individuals are free to take their ideas to the ultimate level, they carry the rest of us up with them. And mm-hmm. if you subjugate that, if you stop those people from being able to achieve and dream and progress, then you're holding all of us down. Mm-hmm. So it's the chaos of liberty that moves humanity forward, not being able to control it and say, oh, you guys are destroying the world from the climate. It's like, if climate change is a real problem, who do you want in charge of it? Lindsey Graham or Elon Musk? No, you want the private sector to be able to tackle these ideas. COVID has shown us that the government is the last person you want in charge of anything important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Open source versus closed source model. I mean, everything that, even Microsoft, which is a closed source model, they rely on open source technology all the time to run their infrastructure. Mm-hmm. They use Linux all the time. So.
Mm-hmm. Everybody want, like, they understand that competition is the key. I mean, it's natural, but yeah. So Microsoft utilizing Linux network, I mean, in open source in order to provide their services, I mean, on a marketplace, that's natural. But they also want to keep their business afloat and on a central level, and they don't want to go out of business. So they're going to attach themselves to the easier source, which is the subsidy, the contracts with government, the charter of a corporation. So, So it's a damn if you do, damn if you don't situation. Maybe there's a way that you can continue that track, but obviously to where you can kind of fold that. But obviously we've seen it now, and we've seen exactly what happens when you attempt to bring private with the public into partnership. You get fascist Italy and Nazi Germany.
Cronyism, favoritism, all the things that people blame on capitalism. But as soon as you bring government in, you know, libertarians, it's free market capitalism. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you take the free market out of capitalism, capitalism always becomes something else. It always becomes cronyism or fascism or something like that. And you have, you know, people using government to curtail competition, you know, to stop competition against them. You know, ultimately, in a free market, no matter how rich a company gets, where it's like just like buying up its competition and things like that, eventually it's going to collapse on itself because its product and services will become so bad that people say, screw that, I'm not going to sell or whatever. And then they use government to squash that competition by buying politicians. But yeah, I'm a firm believer in free market capitalism because competition breeds excellence, and the lack of competition breeds mediocrity.
Mm-hmm. So, and honestly, if you don't have competition, you just have straight up parasitism, which is theft. And I mean, yes. that leads to the next transitional topic that I want to get into from why I wanted to bring you on in the first place, and that is the idea of the political structure we have, voting, and what it really means. Because I'm a student of Lysander Spooner, is Andrew, and his dissection and dissertation of the Constitution and of the federal of government in general. And of the voting structure really comes aligned towards the idea of aggression or even passive aggression for what voting is, because human beings as individuals, we want to preserve ourselves. So we want to be able to protect ourselves, protect our families from the other guy. And when you look into the Constitution, which quite frankly, I look at the Constitution besides the Bill of Rights, so that was probably the only good thing that came out of the convention. The Constitution itself is just centralization to create a government that has the ability, a federal government with the ability to tax, which is why we fought the revolution to begin with. Voting from that perspective, from the Spoonerian perspective, is the majority overhauling the minority and utilizing the representatives that are elected, utilizing what they've been given, the authority they've been given, to basically subjugate everybody because you don't have any responsibility to even your voting class because you don't know them. You don't individually know them. So I guess to lead off with my question, how does voting actually work when mostly, you know, when it comes to government, elections are for the most part frauds?
That's, you know, it's another thing where, you know, libertarians are torn in this respect because we are, you know, it's like when you hear RFK or even Elon Musk say, we need to protect our democracy. That just so rubs me the wrong way because I have zero interest in participating in a policy that tells me I have no rights simply because I'm outnumbered. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they need to change their thing to, instead of, all politicians need to change protect our democracy to protect our liberty, because that's supposed to be their goal. Democracy, they've dumbed down America to think that democracy is this great thing. And without strict limitations on government power and guaranteed rights for the people, democracy is just the tyranny of the mob and as bad as any other statist tyrannical form of government. Mm-hmm. That said, I'm reminded of another quote. I can't remember if it was Churchill or it was like, democracy is absolutely terrible. It's just not as terrible as every other form of government. And I know the and love the Spooner quote that you're talking about the Constitution is not fit to exist because it's failed to protect us or anything. But I can also recognize lawyer rhetoric when I hear it, because no idea, whether spoken or written on parchment, has any power beyond the willingness, the will of the people to fight to see that idea implemented. And so again, we come back to the lack of vigilance, you know, and the governance of man is a very low bar. There is no utopia. So once you learn that there is no perfect, you can look for the best. So grading on the curve, the free people and free markets is the best option for the governance of man by orders of magnitude. And that's what we need to recognize. And that's what we need to fight for and stop messing with all of these other failed ideologies, you know. Don't hurt people. Don't take their stuff. You know, talk and trade with all nations, entangling alliances with none. You know, there's these ideas that were presented to us were eighth grade ideas presented to third graders in 1776. And we're barely out of the fourth grade. You know, we need to do a lot more to be able to implement this to usher in a golden age of humanity. And that's not to say utopia. That's just to say the best that we've ever gotten. And voting, what's the option? You know, it's like, how do we bring down a system that is rigged against us, without trying to insert people who will try to unrig the system against us? Do we just let it collapse? What does that look like? Javier Milei was elected. Mm-hmm. My sheriff in my county, who said, we are not going to enforce mask mandates, we are not going to enforce any gun laws, that person was elected.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens if we, all the people who elected that person, say the government is a farce, it is not, it's a contract I did not sign, I'm not going to participate? Where are we then? That's, you know, I guess that's the question.
Yeah. Andrew, you want to give your perspective?
Well, I just think, you know, like you said, if you want to participate, you should be able to participate. But if you want to be, you know, live in a segregated from that participation, you should be able to leave. So, I mean,
but can you?
Yeah.
But can you? You should. I agree with you 100%. You know, it's like, look, I'm not going to opt out. I'm not going to pay property tax. You don't have to come put my house out if it's on fire. You know, I'll work on some private solutions. You should be able to opt out like that. And, you know, and a lot of people would, and you would see, you know, private cooperation and stuff like that.
Well, but you see a lot of people moving to do that nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah.
But with doing that, they bring these expectations of things that they're comfortable with from other parts of the country. And then they wind up just polluting the area that they need to, because they've implemented the same problems.
Exactly right. The elections, you know, the next elections in Florida and Texas will tell whether the exodus from California and all these blue states is a flight to freedom or the spread of cancer. Mm-hmm. I have a horrible fear that it's the latter, you know, because people aren't smart enough to recognize, you know, leftists aren't smart enough to recognize that it's their policies that created the problems in the first place. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that place sucked. This place has a little less taxes, but damn, I don't want any motorhomes parked on my street. So let's implement some laws to keep people from doing what they want. Yeah. It's, you know, and to that we'll elect leftists, and, you know, and then the leftists implement the same, shit, you know, it's a really stupid person that flees a horrible place and then votes to make it exactly the same as the place they left.
Mm-hmm. And that's where my issue with the voting structure is, I mean, when you see stuff like that, when you see the freedom to be able to move from one place that policies that were voted upon were enacted that allowed for complete destruction of that society or that state or whatever, that city, and then those people begin to take flight and move to another area to escape what really they voted for, and then you just, it's a domino effect, and they start voting for the same people, the same types of people that represent them, the same policies, the same laws go into effect, and then you're just, it's just a never-ending cycle. So like, yeah, my issue with going political is just you're running from the problem that you created, but you're not actually making solutions. And so I guess it may work, it may not, but I'm more on the counter-economical solution of like, just divorce from it, don't participate, and basically work to compete in some capacity, even if you're not actually competing, like grow your own food, invest yourself into a community, and explore what we as agorists term the gray market, which is like farms basically. So I mean, and I know that's a big pill to swallow, and that's very difficult, and it may not do anything for a number of years, or it may not even do anything. Yeah. You might just be off on your
own. But even if you do, how long will it last? You know, how long can you divorce yourself from a system before the system comes and finds you? You know, I think the solution is in education. You know, we teach kids a reverence for liberty like Patrick Henry had. And, you know, and then so that, and the eternal vigilance to recognize this feel good law that they want to implement right now. If this, then what? You can see the long term implications of it. And you have a society that says, fuck no. Whenever any of these things are implemented, look, the best government possible, I won't say a good government, the best government possible is not rocket science. You have transparency and accountability and competition at all levels of government. Imagine if Congress had a one law, one vote rule. And that no law could be longer than 12 pages. And if elections were registered voters showing identification on paper ballots, and the vote is supervised by all interested parties. You never know an election is sound as you do when two people who hate each other are watching the count. You know, that is the element of bringing competition into the political process, because in competition is where you ensure integrity, because one person, it's like Madison said, let ambition counter ambition. You're not going to, right now we have a Congress where they work together to screw us, you know, but if you wanted to implement these things, guess what? You're going to have to elect libertarians to do it. You know, you're going to, like Javier Milei, you think somebody would like just totally deregulate the housing industry besides a libertarian? You know, it's like you have to recognize, if you value liberty, you have to elect politicians who aren't there to serve their party. They're there to fight for liberty. And any libertarian that you elect will fight for liberty. They're incentivized to do that because they recognize, okay, Javier Milei got elected. He he recognizes that that is a public mandate for him to carry out his promises. If he doesn't carry out his promises, he's not going to get elected. If a libertarian gets elected, his their incentive is to limit the size of government, protect individual liberty, and expose corruption. If you elect any Democrat or Republican, their incentive is to serve their party so their party will give them the money so that they can get reelected. You know, I would love to see a world where political ads no longer held any sway over people's minds, where it's like the fundamental thing that you look for in a candidate is a reverence for liberty. And, you know, and you vet them well for this. And then none of Soros's money, none of this thing would have any sway over the people. People are always saying, oh, AI is going to take over the world. Well, how does AI take over the world if it can't lift shit? and people are free thinking enough to say, well, that doesn't make sense. I'm not going to, you know, agree with that because I have a firewall against toxic ideologies because I believe in personal liberty and property rights. You know, it gives people this firewall against toxic ideologies because if it doesn't correspond with liberty, then it doesn't make any sense. And it's, you know, ultimately against humanity. So I don't know. I'm an idealist, but you know, that's how important I think liberty is, you know, it's we depend on it for our survival.
That is true. And the more free that you are, the better off you probably will be, because you'll be able to survive. So, because you'll know, you'll think and learn and innovate and be crafty and creative.
Exactly. So, people don't realize it's like a country that has liberty is a magnet for all the creative minds of the world. So the rest of the world, all these, you know, totalitarian states, they have a brain drain of all their greatest minds that go, screw this. I'm coming to a place where I could be free to create or do my art or whatever. And you know, that creates the most powerful nation in the world. Not this, like, we're going to control everybody and be the most powerful nation in the world. No, you're not the most powerful nation in the world if your citizenry hates your government. You know, the citizenry has to say, I love and respect my government because they respect my individual liberty. And that's how you create an unstoppable nation, you know. And we may have had that at one point in time, you know, and all the other nations of the world had to alter themselves to compete or else they lose their brightest minds, you know. So the less you use your power, the more powerful you become is, you know, the lesson for nations.
I think the United States at one time was very much a protectorate for individual liberty and opportunity, but something happened to change it, not only when the states went to war with each other, but I think after that, I think the true turning of the tide was for centralization, collectivism, federal overreach was 1890, when I think it was the 7th Cavalry, but when United States forces went into Wounded Knee, disarmed everybody, said it will protect you, and then a few hours or a few days later came back and murdered everybody. And then that was, speaking of a disarmed population, they disarmed them, to make sure. Yeah. And then we go from there.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you. That's exactly what I was talking about in eighth grade ideas presented to third graders. You know, it's like, unless these ideas of individual liberty apply to everyone, you're not getting it, you know. And that, it's the old adage, power corrupts, you know, and the only, the foil for power corrupts is, you know, transparency, accountability, and competition at all levels of government. And, you know, only libertarians are going to implement that. And to get them there, you have to vote for them. And and you have to have a sound, you know, a sound election system. So we're under a boot, you know, with with not a lot of ways out. But, you know, what's the alternative? I say being a libertarian is like watching blind people headed for a cliff. And you shout a warning and they just tell you to fuck off. And so you step back to watch the carnage. You go, all right, you know, go ahead, go over the cliff. And then you look down and realize that they are shackled to everything you love and are going to drag it all down with them. What now? What now? That's the situation we're in every day.
It's like the meme. You got the boot and everybody's sitting to be impressed by it. But then you got the boot with the party stuff going around on the side and it's all colorful. But there's the boot's still there and it's still oppressing people. So
yep.
It's an old one. A good one.
You could also apply that to a rainbow flag.
Not that you mean a Marxist flag?
Marxist, the new AIDS Marxist flag.
The new AIDS Marxist flag, yeah.
Well, not to say that we will accept you if you're gay, trans, whatever. I mean, who cares? I mean,
yeah. No, it's like, don't hurt people. Don't hurt people. Don't take their stuff. You know, no one gave a crap about, you know, no one with a brain gives a crap about what you do in your private life. You know, it's when you try to force people to, you know, force people to kowtow to your ideology and you don't have a universal loathing for injustice. When you start trying to make unjust things the norm, that's when people are going to push back. You know, this nonsense of men competing in women's sports is, I can't even fathom the level of insanity that we've come to accept.
Yeah, weak men in comfortable times, pretty much.
So. Yeah. Weak men create hard times. Here we are.
Diversity plus proximity equals conflict, right? It's old Marxist trick.
Yeah.
And then not only
the area, partially integrating.
Mm-hmm. And not only Marxist, but the fact is, it just centrist in general. I mean, it's either the poisoning of or the correct interpretation of, for this country at least, the general welfare clause of the Constitution. It's either the poisoning of it or the correct interpretation, especially. Yes. So.
Yes. And yeah, there's a lot of evils that have come from the misinterpretation of those things. Yeah.
So right now, the special interest, if it's not the gigantic, at one point it was gigantic corporations and certain businesses. Now it's this trans gay. It's the most successful civil rights movement to ever garnish the United States, the gay rights and trans rights. It's just
the DEI, the diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Inclusion. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, if you're any organization is not a meritocracy, it's anti-natural rights or anti-natural law. You know, it's, you're putting shackles on human development when you don't reward excellence. And then everyone says, oh, that guy's excellent. This is what I got to do to compete. And it doesn't matter with color, skin color, religion, whatever. It's like when you see excellence, you say, that's the level I have to get to compete. And this DEI is this attempt to just pull down the people who are excellent to the level of the people who are unwilling to compete. And it's, you know, it's a death cult. It's anti-human. And I couldn't believe, you know, when it started to get into the STEM parts of education, I go, this is insane, but surely it'll never go to stuff like air traffic controllers or airline pilots and stuff like that, because people's lives are on the line, are actually on the line, and you're not going to to settle for mediocrity in these things, but here we are. It's insanity, you know. And then I think, okay, so their next plan is to just take away airline travel from us because they think it's, you know, going to affect the climate. And this is their nefarious way to do it. Just make people afraid to fly because all the pilots are, you know, suck or whatever. You know, it's like we have to look for the nefarious ways they're going to do things. One of my least favorite is like, oh, we're going to inject your meat with the COVID vaccine so that people will stop wanting to eat meat so we can save the planet. It's like, boy, you attack my ribeyes, you're getting close to a kinetic war.
Hey, that's why you shop local, everybody.
Here I come.
Beautiful.
Yeah, the you know, that's something I went to my county commission with and said, we need to nullify all state and federal laws that are limiting the local production and selling of food of all types, you know. And you know, Thomas Massey with the Prime Act, there's three factories in the country that process our meat. That's insane. You know, it's like find a rancher that you can buy meat directly from. Mm-hmm. And you know, and your local farmers market is going to be your best friend in the coming years, because you know, most of the food in the grocery store is poison anyway, so we need to wean ourselves off of it and mm-hmm. start shopping local again.
Mm-hmm. yeah that is the truth. So shop local, build relationships, and participate in society in the most peaceful way. And in our view, that is not political. But yeah. if that is political to any of y'all, as and you agree with Pat on the voting aspect, that might be the key. I mean, it could be voting for the right people. It could be being counterproductive and counter economics. Whichever path you take, eventually they're going to have to meet in the middle at some point, right? So
yeah, you know, it's like, hey, I'd love to not have to. Politics is a horrible, you know, mm-hmm. I've been involved in it a long time, and I got to see at the highest levels in the, you know, Ron Paul 2012, the shenanigans of the Republican Party and stuff like that. It's mm-hmm. it's the occupation with perhaps the most scumbags in the mm-hmm. world. But do you just let them have it without any opposition? You know, it's like you say, I can philosophically agree with you guys that, you know, mm-hmm. that 99% of the time your vote is not going to matter, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a waste of time and effort, and it's contributing to a corrupt system. Mm-hmm. But that one time, you know, when you get a local sheriff that believes in the Bill of Rights, you know, that one time when you get a Javier Milei, that one time mm-hmm. when you get a Thomas Massey, who's going to be the one guy in the room that says, nope, this is not right. The one time when you get a Ron Paul and things like that, and you start educating people about liberty, it's like, I can dream and say, yeah, what if we had 400 Thomas Masseys? You know, what kind of a country would we have then? You know, and I don't see it happen until we hit bottom and we educate a lot of people. But, mm-hmm. you know, educating someone on the principles of liberty, you don't have to do 12 years of school to do it. It can be done in 90 minutes to a person with an open mind. So, mm-hmm. you know, and Javier Milei's speech at the World Economic Forum, how many millions of people are going to see that and be introduced to libertarianism for the first time? That's something, you know, and know that like any one of the libertarian field would do exactly the same thing if you elected them, you know. It's yeah. like libertarians are like the only sober person in the car, and nobody will let us drive. But you know, maybe when we start hitting bottom and realizing that, you know, especially like every good things any Republican says in the in his campaign is libertarian ideologies. Maybe people will start connecting the dots. Is going like, all right, they preach all this stuff during the campaign and completely ignore it once they're elected. What if we elected a libertarian who, you know, that's their whole purpose of life is to pursue these principles? So, you know, I don't know. But, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding of the philosophy. And, you know, so we need people who can eloquently deliver it. And, you know, it's all about education. Humanity is capable of great and amazing things, but only when they're free.
Yeah. Or they pay attention.
Yeah.
Pay attention in school, everybody. And then run from school.
Yeah, no. Don't pay attention in school. Read a book on Austrian economics or read one of my favorites that isn't that popular is I think it was made as a textbook. It's called The Making of America, and it just explains the process that the founders went through to design it, and it was all about opposing power corrupts. You know, it's like creating transparency, accountability, and competition. So you would have this open and transparent government, which is the best possible government you can have. So, yeah. Which is still terrible. But, you know, you got to deal with the assholes. Unfortunately, there are assholes in the world, and that's where the problem arises. If we're all, you know, if we're all peaceful and just wanted to live together and not hurt people and not take their stuff, then we wouldn't need to be having these discussions.
Well, that would be communism on its utopian idea. Share everything, but that's impossible. Yeah. So.
Yeah, no, I didn't say share everything. Yeah. Excellence has to be rewarded, or your society is doomed. And
that's
so,
your personal property.
Yeah,
property.
Yeah.
And right. Thus, that is the reason why communism fails. So,
yeah,
that's the only thing that they disagree with us on that aspect is merit is a reward. I mean,
yep. It
really is. Yep. I mean, but this has been a wonderful conversation. We've gone well over our time again, Andrew.
Yeah,
we've been doing that.
I appreciate it. I really appreciate it, guys. I love talking about liberty. I love the clash of ideas, and you know, the clash of ideas is where the best ideas are born. So there you go. I appreciate it.
And any time that we can go over about a half an hour talking about liberty and expanding on it and clashing all those ideas together, I mean, I'm all for it. I'd rather go 30 minutes over talking about some real stuff. And so it's been a pleasure, Pat. Anything that you want to plug again? Or?
Yeah, everybody check out Max Justice, my libertarian superhero web series. I'm a filmmaker, and I produced that with my son, and it's a pretty fun thing. You know, the idea of it is when I'm putting this hero in a situation that everybody wants to be in when bad guys are doing bad shit and they get what's coming to them. So it's a lot of fun in that, you know, and my idea was that culture precedes politics. And so if I could, you know, kind of capture the imagination of the gamer generation and stuff like that with some principles of liberty, that maybe you would plant some seeds in the future. So, so check out Max Justice. I'm Patrick Kirby 58 on Twitter. I'm sorry, X. And, I spout, liberty and the prose of the founders with a few cuss words on a daily basis. So check that out too.
Very, very admirable to the, to the First Amendment right there. So, and you gotta be. So.
Oh yeah, no. The censors are always the liars, as I say. The first, you know, the free speech. It's like George Washington said: without free speech, dumb and silent, we are led like lambs to the slaughter. And that is the truth. The foil for bad ideas is better ideas. So bring on the bad ideas that I may crush them under a mountain of truth. That should be the attitude of every American. The foil for propaganda, whether generated by the media or AI, is to ask questions and demand answers. So, free speech is vitally important.
So, well, it was great to have you on. Everybody follow Pat on Twitter, or X, formerly known as Twitter, if you have. Yeah. Check out maxjustice.tv. And for you, Andrew, anything in your corner to add to finish off?
Just hit me up on Telegram, t.me/otakusauce. I was trying to grow that, so.
Well, with that, I will make sure that we don't take up any of our Saturday. Let you get to your day, and look for this episode within the next couple weeks, and look for our next episode as well, and every other episode. So, and again, check out Pat and just keep supporting the liberty movement. So, and the revolution is love, just like Ron Paul promoted during his campaign. So love conquers all. And with that, I'm going to show my love for my legacy. I am the legacy of Jennifer Ant Kaiser. I am Zachary Kaiser once again. This has been The Legacy Right. He's Andrew Joseph. That's Patrick Kirby. And let's expand liberty.
You have well said.
Peace.
Right. Have a good day. Thanks for watching.